What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Hargens.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this particular podcast. And it's special because we're talking about episode 468. And do you know what that is? That means this podcast has existed for 9 years. It's actually existed longer than that. But, you know, if you take 468, you divide it by 52, that's what you get. You get nine. And that is the sort of the marking of the calendar, as it were, that I like to do in regards to this podcast, even though, like I said, I've been doing it longer. But man, I can't even begin to articulate, but I'll try to, how special this is. But the reason that we are coming together on this particular podcast is for one guest, and his name is Ryan Savitsky. He is the vocalist from One Step Closer, who hands down is my favorite hardcore band right now. And this interview is special for me because I like being able to bring to light bands that are, I mean, clearly One Step Closer. Like, they don't, I mean, they need help, but as far as publicity is concerned, but they're definitely on their way. A lot of people are paying attention to them, you know, once they signed to Run for Cover and, you know, put out some incredible stuff within the context of melodic hardcore. But I just really like being able to paint a very broad picture of independent music on this particular podcast. New bands, old bands, small bands, gigantic bands, people who are behind the scenes, people who are documenting this independent music scene. I just love it. And what made this episode special for me is the fact that I really like the fact that hardcore and punk still excites me. There are new bands that come out that remind me of bands that, when I first started to get into this music scene. And it's not to say that, the bands that are around now, everyone is just ripping off everybody from prior generations, because, I mean, let's be honest, we are all doing that, you know, no matter what generation, we're all always standing on the shoulders of giants. But anyways, I just was very excited to have Ryan on, and it was a special episode, and I was glad that he was excited to be part of this tapestry of independent music, but then also be part of the 9-year anniversary celebration for this thing. So we'll get to him in a moment, but you, the listener, I cannot thank you enough for interacting with this particular podcast on a weekly, monthly, annual basis, however this podcast fits into your life. I really do genuinely appreciate that. There are a million things competing for your attention. There's a million other podcasts. There's so many things that could tear you away from this. And you continue to show up week over week, month over month, whenever you're interacting with this, it really does mean a lot to me. And I want to make sure that you, the listener, feel that gratitude because I am trying to force it through this microphone into my computer and then into your headphones or car stereo or whatever it is. I just really, really appreciate that. You can always reach out to the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. I love to hear feedback and just saying hi. I really enjoy that. And then, we're able to be digital friends from that perspective. I also have to send out some special shout outs. My friend Dave, Dave Deff, that is what I call him. And he is the graphic man behind this podcast. And when I say graphic man, it might sound limiting. He is just, I don't know, I just love him as a human being. And he's been able to help this podcast roll along very smoothly and supply all the graphics, do the logo. He's just been instrumental in keeping this thing rolling. So huge shout out to you, Dave. I love you. And I'm so glad that you are in my life, not only from a professional perspective, but as a human being and a friend. So shout outs to Dave for making this podcast look probably cooler than it actually is. And also special shout out to Topo Chico, who has been hooking me up over the past couple of months with some, incredibly nice gifts, beverages. And I just like the fact that people can work at these companies and be like, yes, I want to support the music scene and be able to give where I can. And so, yeah, special shout out to Topo Chico because they are an incredible beverage if you've ever tried them. And then to all of the publicists and people that, pitch ideas to me, I really, really do appreciate that. And all of the sponsors that have engaged with this show, that is, kind of one of the main reasons this is able to continue. Because if I was just doing this on my own accord, I mean, let's be honest, I probably would still be doing this, but maybe to a lesser degree. But the sponsors are what keep this thing, flowing and alive amongst many of you. So as you can tell, this is a very long-winded intro, but I have to make sure that all of these things are highlighted because it's incredibly important to me. So anyways, let's talk to Ryan. One Step Closer is going to put out a new record on Run for Cover in the upcoming weeks. And they're out on tour right now. And it's really exciting for them. I love this band and you should love this band. So here is Ryan. And I will talk to you at the end of the episode like I always do. Yeah, so I usually start these things off with my own kind of personal entry point to you, your music, and everything like that. And like I was saying before we started recording, like you're hands down my favorite hardcore band as of right now. And it kind of reminds me of like when I was like, 16, 17, like first getting into like Strife, where I was just like, every little bit of information I could find out about this band, I need to
know. Yeah, dude. Oh yeah, I got that.
And I've been trying to articulate to not only myself but then others of like why I enjoy you guys so much, and I was feeling a lot of the feelings that I imagine other people are gravitating towards, you and the band. That there is this interesting combo of you guys existing for a while but never, releasing a full length, and like kind of, for lack of a better term, making yourself scarce, not to being like, oh, we've done 75 US tours or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure in many respects, it's not like this intentional, like, hey, we're a mysterious band or anything like that. Or maybe it is intentional, but
no, it's definitely not.
But do you get what I'm saying? Where it's just like, maybe because you guys, I guess, haven't been quote unquote overexposed, that there is that desire for people to find out more about you guys, whatever that may mean.
Yeah, I guess just because we haven't, like, we wrote a good bit of music, but like we haven't written like a full length ever, like we only wrote like just the EP that got put out on Triple B. That's like the most significant thing that we've ever put out, So like, I think just like, I don't know, like I feel like people are interested and kind of like curious now. You know what I mean?
No, it's true. And I guess that does kind of speak to, because it is this weird notion, especially in the sort of generations of hardcore that exist, where, you know, whatever, in the late 90s, early 2000s, the concept of either releasing too much music or overplaying, like, that just didn't exist. You played 400 shows in your local area. Like, you just constantly punished people with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I feel like nobody cared, though. And also, it was like, there wasn't that social media aspect where everyone's like posting these shows, you know. It's like, hey, like, this band is playing the same location, you know, for the next like 5 months. It's like they're playing there every 2 weeks, you know. And it's like, but like back then, people weren't really like people were videoing it, but like it took so much longer for them to get that anywhere, like even get it. And like, it's not like you could upload it to the internet or something, you know what I mean? So it was just like, these people are just like playing their local hometowns, and it's just like, oh, I saw them maybe like a month ago, but I'm still just going to go anyway, just because, like, I don't know. I haven't seen any videos. I maybe listened to their cassette like a couple times. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think it was cool like that, though.
No, that is a good point. I mean, it is something I guess I didn't kind of consider, that there clearly is a huge audience outside of the walls of whatever show you're attending, because of just the fact that, I mean, you have all of these amazing documentarians like, you know, Sonny from Hate56 and all of these people that are spreading. I mean, you know, the show that you just recently played back, you know, for the first time after whatever, 16 months, but that filtered out to so many other people where that, you know, if you guys played that same show a month later, like people clearly would have known that, you know, like, be like, oh yeah, exactly. Did they just play that? Yeah. It's a good point.
Yeah, I think, like, I mean, Sonny does a great job, like, with, he literally does it, like, he's had, like, everything in the Northeast. Like, literally, yes. I was seeing him, like, pretty much, like, once every, like, 2 weeks, probably once a month at least. Like, he was just everywhere, you know? And, like, I give a lot of credit to people like that, just because, like, he's really doing it just for the love of music, you know? And, like, people, like, in other countries and, like, you know, at, like, even just across the United States, like, really rely on his videos just to, like, discover new bands and, like, listen to, you know, their favorite band play live, because maybe they haven't played their home state or, like, even anywhere near their house, you know, at all. Like, so I don't know. People like that really, like, they deserve a lot more credit than they get, I think.
True. And honestly, not like I would compare the two exactly, but it's that same notion. Like, I remember, you know, once Hot Topic started to be a place where people, you know, bought music and t-shirts and stuff like that, there's obvious negative things that you can throw a direction of a store and a mall. But then there is that point of, hey, maybe this city does not have like a local cool independent record store. So a kid, you know, getting into My Chemical Romance and going in there and then all of a sudden finding out about Bane or whatever, like that's pretty cool. And it's the same sort of idea that Sonny can give a platform to these bands. And like you said, be able to put you guys on highlight that is like, oh yeah, you haven't seen this band because we haven't done these, you know, 15 US tours or whatever.
Exactly. And like, also, I mean, I completely agree with the statement with like the Hot Topic stuff, because like, we don't even have that great of a record store in Wilkes-Barre. Like we have our local store is called Gallery of Sound, and like, they don't get like the, you know, the smaller like hardcore bands or like the smaller alternative bands like in there. Like, it's mainly just like more mainstream stuff, you know? But like, if we had, you know, a local record store, like even now for like kids, like especially with now that like vinyl is bumping, like how crazy it is, and like they would be able to find like all these crazy hardcore bands and like all these like old bands that like, you know, you never know. But like, yeah, I think the modern day version of that is pretty much Sonny and Hate56.
Yeah, totally. We'll pick apart some more things about your band as we have this discussion, but I know, just wanted to focus on you as a person. Were you actually born and raised in Wilkes-Barre?
Yeah, so I live in a town called Pringle, which is like right above Kingston, and I'm like 10 minutes outside of Wilkes-Barre. But yeah, I was born and raised here. Lived in the same house for the last 21 years of my life, you know. So it's a cool city, but it's just a weird place, but I love it nonetheless, you know.
Oh, for sure. Well, you develop, I mean, especially at the age that you're at, there's that desire to be like, I want to see more of the world. But then there's always that connective tissue that pulls you back to being like, oh yeah, like, you know, my hometown is pretty cool for reasons A, B, and C.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like actually from like touring and seeing other places, I've like almost like grown a little bit more of an appreciation for our area and like how unique and like kind of weird it is. But like, it's really kind of taught me a lot. And like, I don't, as much as like, it's kind of like a, you know, a depressing area to be in and like, grow up in, it's definitely like has some core values that I've learned just from being here. And, just, you know, and like now, like I said, like since we were touring and doing stuff, like I've definitely gained more of an appreciation for here.
Sure. And it's also very interesting and cool that so much from a independent music perspective has always been happening in that area, you know, and that's what makes that area so interesting, because no one would automatically assume like, oh yeah, you know, Wilkes Barre is going to produce, you know, all these, you know, legendary hardcore, you know, indie rock bands or whatever. It's like, oh yeah, so they many. Have.
Yeah. There's been so many, like literally, like, I mean, it's crazy. Cause when I started going to shows, I was like, I went to my first show when I was like 12 or something around there. And, like I was shown Title Fight when I was like maybe like a year before that. And it was like, it was when Title Fight was on, Vans Warped Tour, and they were doing a secret set because they were contracted to Warped Tour. So they couldn't like do anything outside of Warped Tour while they were on the tour, you know? So they did like a secret set. They used to do secret sets under, Western Haikus. And, I just remember going to that show for the first time and just like being completely like blown away by like just the local music scene. It was like, I think it was a big, I can't remember exactly what show it was, but I'm almost 100% certain it was like a memorial for one of their friends who passed, but it was like a really big show with like a lot of locals. I think it was like Title Fight, Cold World, Bad Seed, like a bunch of like crazy bands. And, it was like, it just like opened my eyes to like, holy shit, you know, there's a crazy music scene in my area. You know what I mean? And like, it was something I had no idea about. So yeah, I mean, this place is definitely known for their music and then like the bands that have come out of here.
Right. And then also the fact that it's this, you know, I mean, most of Pennsylvania outside of Philadelphia is, you know, pretty rural, and there's this small town community vibe everywhere outside of the city of Philly, like I was mentioning. And you have that combined with all the fact that you have all of these disparate suburbs that kind of come together to put on these, you know, hall shows to be like, oh yeah, like, you know, it's Kingston and the greater Wilkes Barre area that, you know, we're able to do these shows together. And that's what kind of provides you that local platform to jump off.
And it's crazy because you say like local, like that venue, like literally we played our first show back on Saturday. And it was in the middle of like nowhere. It was just like a very rural area in like a VFW hall. And like the amount of people that were there and just like the amount of like, you know, Pennsylvania kid, like it was just cool. You know what I mean? But like, it was like the most like Pennsylvania hardcore show like I've ever, like, you know what I mean? I was just like, oh, this is like, this makes total sense. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, but it was really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's your family structure like? Brothers and sisters in the house, like mom and dad still together? What's that look like?
Yeah, so my parents have been together since high school, actually, and they're still together.
High school sweethearts, that's adorable.
yeah, pretty crazy. I feel like you don't really see much of that anymore, which is like kind of nuts. So my parents are still together. I live with them at, you know, the house I grew up in, and I have an older brother. He is 29, so he's 8 years older than I am. So there's a big separation between us, but like we're super, super close. And just like, you know, even just growing up, like I feel like I used to annoy him when I was younger, like probably like before I hit like middle school, you know what I mean? But then like I hit middle school and kind of started getting into things that like he was into, and like we kind of shared similar interests like more and more as I grew up. So like, we just got super close. He's like super, super supportive of like the band stuff. And like, so my whole family is like, my parents are really, really supportive of it. It's cool.
That's really cool. I'll pick on that thread a little bit, but the, so you were the, you're the baby of the bunch. So you get away with murder, I guess.
Yes. Yes. I get away with whatever. Which is pretty funny.
I love that.
It's true. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. It's like all of these archetypes that exist, whether it's you being an only child or the oldest of the bunch, like it's just universal. Everyone has those experiences where it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, my little brother or sister, like they could just do anything and the parents don't even care about it.
Yeah, my brother used to get so pissed because I would just get away with literally everything. But like, honestly though, like my parent, like especially my mom would baby the hell out of my older brother. Like she loved my older brother. They had like they had their connection, you know, when I was like younger, it was like me and my dad doing everything together. Like, you know, he was like teaching me guitar and like doing stuff like that. And then like my mom and my brother were just like I feel like they were just like connecting in their own way, like doing their own thing. And like, she was like his like support, like big support system, like growing up through that same time. So like, but now it's kind of weird. Cause like, I feel like almost things kind of flip flopped, you know what I mean? Where like, mm-hmm. like my brother is now like super, like pretty close to my dad. And now I'm like closer with my mom. It's like weird. I don't know. Our family's cool. Yeah. Though. Everyone's really great.
No, that's great. And that's the evolution of relationships where you could find your needs being met more by your mother and father at a certain time. And yeah, that, I mean, it totally makes sense how that kind of ebbs and flows where, especially when you're talking about you're actually developing as a human being and you have your interests as opposed to just being this like, you know, kid that's just has a bunch of stuff thrown at him.
Yeah, exactly. I really think it was just because like, when I was growing up, my dad was just like showing me all these new things and like helping me like be creative and like stuff like that. And then my mom was like my mom and like the age where my brother was, like she was just really helping him along with like life, like real life stuff, I guess, you know? And right. Where I wasn't, like my dad was like more like being fun and like wanted to do fun things and like, right. you know? And now yeah. that I'm kind of at that like, oh, I gotta be like, you know, real life stuff, you know, like thinking about that kind of thing. I feel like my mom's a little bit more like the person to go to for that sometimes. So,
right. Like here's how to open a checking account, Ryan. We got you taken care of.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I love that. And like you mentioned, I know that you've said in previous interviews that your dad plays guitar and that was kind of like your entry point to being musical. What was interesting about your dad playing guitar and him kind of like showing that to you? Was it just like, oh, this is cool that my dad is into this, or this just is another way for me to express myself?
He kind of like, I always thought it was really cool. Like I was like super interested. I remember just like seeing, cause like the guitars were always around the house, you know what I mean? And we used to have like a set room upstairs where like, he had the guitars hanging on the walls and like stuff like that. And like, I was just like super intrigued when I was younger. Like, I don't know. It was just cool. And like, I think like he was kind of like pushing for me to like learn, you know what I mean? And just like, kind of like, he was like, oh, for my 7th birthday, he got me like an acoustic guitar and it kind of didn't like stick with me at first. Like I was like kind of messing around with it. Wasn't like loving it because I wasn't like getting the hang of it at first. And then when I was 8, I was like, I really like, I fell in love with this like cherry red Fender Strat. And like, I like used all my birthday money that I got and like he threw in whatever extra little bit to help me get it. And then that was like when it really took off. And that's when like he was pretty much just teaching me all the time. And like, I was just kind of, I don't know. That just like opened up a huge door for me. Honestly, it's kind of crazy like looking back because when I was like learning and like playing, I always like wanted to be in a band and wanted to do that kind of thing. But like I never thought it would come to like where it is now. And even like recently, like about like a couple months ago, like when we were recording the record, my dad was like, it's really crazy just to see like I never would have thought, you know, you would have taken it this far and like would have done, you know, things and like toured and like do stuff like just off me teaching you how to play guitar. You know what I mean? So yeah. it's cool. I mean, I'm happy. Like I got really lucky with that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, no, that's special. I mean, I'm sure they're like, oh, well, Ryan, you're in a yelling hardcore band. Like, that's terrible. I wish you would have chosen a different style of music. No, I'm just kidding.
No, they're kind of like, I think my mom was always kind of like, oh, like, why don't you sing more? You know what I mean?
Oh, of course. I mean, that's, I don't care what generation you are. I mean, now that there is like that hardcore and punk has existed for, you know, longer than 40 years, for parents to have a little bit more of an understanding, at the end of the day, they're always going to look at yelling music as being like, what is, like, I don't get that. Why are they doing that with the music?
Yeah, exactly. And like, even, but like, honestly, like, my dad's into like kind of like heavier metal stuff. And like, he likes, you know, like, he likes all the hair bands, like the old hair bands and stuff. But even he, like, sometimes I catch him listening to like some just like, I don't even know what the bands are, but there's like yelling parts and like different things in it. And he's just like loving it. You know what I mean? So like, I don't know, like, they're kind of like, at least like, my mom's like a huge country head. So like, she like is obsessed with country. And I always just like shit on her a little bit for like liking country so much. So like, she'll kind of like, what, we go back and forth and she'll be like, oh, you like, you're like screamy shit. So like,
yeah, you guys are trying to dunk on each other, but it's like, no, that's,
yeah, exactly.
That's cool. And so with, you know, you kind of growing up and trying to figure out, you know, who you were and your identity, were you kind of like, you know, an outdoor kid? Like, were you into sports? Where did you, you know, find yourself gravitating towards in like, you know, junior high and high school?
So when I was like young, I was like a big baseball player. I played, I was like super, super into it. I played, I think, from 5 years old till I was like 14. So like 9 years or something like that. And my parents like were really pushing me to like be a baseball player, like try to like do something with that. Cause I was like, I guess pretty good. I don't know. I don't like talking about myself. Like, you know what I mean? But like,
no, it's okay. Yeah. Yeah. I asked you the question, Ryan. It's okay.
Yeah. So I guess I was pretty decent, and like they really wanted me to kind of pursue that and like see what I could do with it. And like, you know, maybe like get into a college for baseball or something. And sure. I started skateboarding around that time, like a little before that, but I really got heavily into it when I was like 12, 13. And then I remember my last year of baseball, like when I was 14, just like skipping practice all the time to go skate and just like be with my friends, you know what I mean? And like do that whole thing. And so baseball slowly fell off like after that. Like pretty much that was my last year. I was just like, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. I kind of like, all I want to do is skate, and all I want to do is like go to hardcore shows, you know what I mean? Cause that's like really when I started getting into that stuff. And but yeah, I mean, I was always like a big outdoor kid. Like my local neighborhood kids, like we would always be outside messing around and like skating or scootering down the street. Like I live on a really big hill, so we used to just bomb the hills like on whatever we had, you know what I mean? And just like,
right.
You know, I was always outside doing stuff. But then, yeah, so like after, you know, once I hit like high school, like around 14, 15, that's when I was like really, you know, started doing bands and really was just like still skating a shit ton. And like, that's pretty much all I did like through high school and, you know, even in, like into college, you know, that's like that, that's like, that's pretty much my identity is like skating and like music, you know?
Sure. Yeah. That's the most consistent thing where it's like, oh yeah, this is going to last me the rest of my life.
Yeah. And that's like, honestly, it's like, I've met like such amazing people and like have such good friendships like through those two things. And like more than like half the people I went to high school with, you know what I mean? It like, I was always like a lot of my friends were always like at least like 2 or 3 years older than me for some reason. I think it was just because like I was always hanging around with like the older skater kids, or like, you know, there wasn't many kids like my age that were like playing instruments or like wanted to do bands or anything like that. So, you know, I just, you know, had a lot of like gained a lot of friends like through those two things. And like, I'm super grateful to like have that.
Rockabilia, they've been supporting this podcast for the past 4-5 years or so. I can't even remember, but they are the only place that you should be going to check out all of the merchandise that is available for you to purchase online. And you can use this code 100 words or less. That's the number 100 words or less. And that gets you 10% off your order.
I can't tell you how much this company means to me, but you know, I'll try. Fast shipping, all officially licensed stuff. I order from them, you know, probably on a like month-to-month basis, like every other month, I think. And I love what they do. They recently just had a awesome run at the Minneapolis State Fair because they are based in Minneapolis. And they brought out all of this rad old merch where they did some officially licensed stuff from like Soundgarden and Prince and David Bowie. And then they also did some stuff with Metallica. I love what they do. Rockabilia, go to that website, use this code 100 words or less, and you'll be able to get 10% off your order. There's no two bones about it. Rockabilia is the place you need to go. And thank you, as always, Rockabilia, for your continued support of this podcast. And I love you guys. I only know one of you, but I will just throw that to the whole company. You can play this and then everybody will feel the love. But rockabilia.com, 100 words or less. Here's to another 9 years.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Did you care, I guess, about school? Like what sort of life path were you? I mean, because I know you're also obviously pursuing all the music stuff, but was there any sort of practical life path for what you were supposed to do from a sort of job or career perspective? Like, what did your parents do? You know, what was the kind of direction that you were headed?
So I went to like a tech school. So I did like audio visual stuff and like photography, like all through high school.
Okay.
So that was like kind of what I was like looking to do. I was like doing a lot, like I was in a lot of like contests and like through the high, like through the school for like photography. And I was like winning like a good bit of them. And just like, you know, I think like my teacher was really pushing me to kind of do that kind of stuff. But for some reason, like I wanted to do like biology. I was like always a huge like science person. Like I always loved science and I was like super into that. So I went to college. Like I started like my first semester and I was like, oh, I want to do, you know, biology. And I fucking hated it. I literally hated it so much. So I kind of was just like, oh, I don't really know what I want to do. And then like I was kind of just taking courses and just like as like a general studies major. And then I kind of started doing graphic design stuff because, you know, that goes like hand in hand with the photography and like, you know, videography stuff. So I was doing all that stuff through high school a bunch and like I was like really enjoying graphic design. So honestly, I probably would have been doing a graphic design major or like going to like a, like doing another 2 years for graphic design. But, my parents, going back to that, I completely forgot about that. My parents, my mom works at a hospital, like a veterans hospital. So, but she's like, I don't know exactly what she does, but she like helps like fill prescriptions and like do all that stuff. But she's not like, she never went to school for nursing or anything like that. I think she went to school for like communications or like something along those lines.
Oh, sure.
And then, my dad is an electrical engineer through, the government, like at like, there's this place, there's like an army, depot, like 45 minutes from my house or so. Okay. So he works on the Army base.
Got it. Yeah. So very, very practical jobs, as it were.
Yeah, pretty much. Like they both went to school, you know, they're both like just doing, you know, yeah, normal, kind of normal jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're the weirdo that's like, hey, I want to skate and be in bands. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And like, they were like, insanely supportive, like, which, like, I was really surprised, like genuinely, like, I mean, I think because my dad taught me guitar and like was kind of a big part of like the reason why I'm able to do this stuff, like he almost like is like just like super proud and like almost like is like, I wish I could have done that, so I'm happy that he's doing it, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, of course, anytime there's that idea of something that is, you know, interesting and creative, even though it may not be, you know, practical from a career perspective, it's like, hey, like, you know, this is the time where you can do something weird like this, like play in a straight edge shoring hardcore band. Like, I guess let's go. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, your introduction to independent music, you know, came at a pretty early age, like 11 and 12. I mean, when I say independent, I mean like getting into, you know, Title Fight, and I know Turning Point was and still is a huge influence to you. I guess what attracted you to it beyond just the, you know, like you said, going to a show and seeing that a cool experience. What sort of attracted you to that? Like, had you been into punk prior to that, or like what was the sort of transition phase?
I think probably so. Like one of my childhood best friends was his older brother. Is the reason why like I kind of got into hardcore, because we were like, I guess the transitioning band was like Green Day and like Blink-182, like that kind of stuff.
Sure.
I was like huge into Green Day when I was like, and I still am, I still love that band, like that, I still have a huge appreciation for them, but like I was huge into them when I was like, you know, 9, 10, and so was my best friend at the time, and his older brother was like, yo, like, yeah, you guys like that kind of stuff. Well, like, let me show you this, like, more local, like, hardcore-y, like, punk-type band called Title Fight. Like, they're super cool. They're, like, good friends of mine. Check this out. And, like, it was just so cool. Like, I don't know what it was, but, like, he showed me that the song Memorial Field off The Last Thing You Forget. Yeah. And, like, I heard that, and I was just kind of, like, blown away. And for the longest time, I could not remember the name of the band. And then like a month or two later, I like went back to their house and I was like hanging out with them. And I saw his older brother and I was like, hey, like, what was the name of that band that you showed me like forever ago, like a month or two ago? And he was like, oh, it's Title Fight. Like, I'm going to write you down like a whole list of, you know, songs and bands to like check out. So he kind of just like wrote down like a really quick list, and like, I started just like listening to that stuff, and like I just fell in love with it. I don't know if it was like the aggression of it at the time, or if it was just like the, wow, I've never heard anything like this kind of thing.
Right. Like this is not on the radio. Like, this is just different.
Yeah, exactly. It was something different, and it was just something that like really caught my attention because of that. The fact that like, I've never heard a band like Title Fight. And honestly, if I'm being real, I probably still think that I've never heard a band that sounds like exactly like Title Fight, you know, but like, I think in a way, like that just like caught my attention and it just made me fall in love with it.
Well, and too, I mean, being completely honest, like they were children, like, you know, I mean, they're so young, like, yeah, in relation to, you know, when you were watching them, like, you know, your first couple of shows, it's like, you know, they were ostensibly only, you know, a couple of years older than you.
And yeah. So, they were like, yeah. I think Ned and Ben just turned 30 this year.
Yeah.
So they're like, they were like 18, 19. Yeah. Which is like, it's crazy. 'Cause like, now, like, I mean, like, I love those dudes and like they're great people, and it's just like, damn, I've literally like been listening to your band since I was like for like 11 years. You right. know what I mean? Like, yeah. That is insane.
And where were you just, you know, listening to them, obviously on the internet? Were you just, you know, messing around with Spotify and Apple Music, or were you finding them on, you know, other places?
I was just looking like profusely on like YouTube, like just like searching, yep, and searching like for anything I could find on YouTube, because that was like my source of like finding music and different things. And then I was like finding like live sets of them. Like there's like this classic video of them playing in Shikshini, which is like probably like 30 minutes like down the way from me. And they're playing at this like VFW, like fire hall type thing. And I think the video is from 2008 or somewhere or that time around that time frame. And I remember watching that video and I was like, this is so crazy. You know what I mean? Like, this is the coolest thing. Like, why are these people freaking out? Like, why are they doing that? But it's so cool. And like, I don't know. Like, I just remember or Ben is like wearing this like camo, like this real tree camo t-shirt. And like they just look like they're like so young. And like looking back on that video, that was just like so inspiring for me, you know?
Sure. Well, you're getting all of this information from, you know, the, like what they're wearing to the salt, like you're just getting so much and you're like, I need to know every frame of this video.
Yeah. Cause I was like, why is he wearing such an ugly shirt? You know what I mean?
Totally.
And like, I don't know, like, but I think that was like one of like the, I think Stick Together did like some Realtree camo shirts. And I'm pretty sure it was like a Stick Together Realtree camo t-shirt, like yep. Looking back. And like, I'm like, now I'm looking back and I'm like, oh, that's actually kind of sick. But like back then I was like, man, that's so ugly. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And I think like Ned was wearing like this crazy Judge long sleeve. And I don't know why I remember this, but I could like literally see the video in my head right now. And I probably haven't seen it in like 6 years, you know?
Right. Well, that stuff is so important because it makes this, I mean, because you're looking at this old Judge shirt and you're just like, man, it looks like a triple XL on him. But like,
yeah,
so cool.
Exactly.
All of these things ping-ponging around your brain. And so I totally get that. But no, I appreciate you explaining that because it is that visceral experience that you get when you, you know, watch a band live. And it's so difficult to articulate to a person who has not experienced that, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Like, because I was like, at the time, those friends that I kind of grew up with, like are like my best friend, his older brother, like those were the only two people that I knew that were listening to that. You know what I mean? And yeah. Then I was like showing some of the other, my other friends, and they're like, what, you know, this sucks. You know, like this is awful. And like, then as I got older and then like started skating with all these people who were like involved in the hardcore scene, they were like, it was like, wow, like these people like Title Fight and like love that band. And then now they're showing me even more bands like Cold World and like all this stuff. And I'm like, it's just cool. It like, I don't know. It all like, it, like looking back at this kind of all like it was just like the ramp up to where like I am sitting now, you know what I mean? It just all like, yeah. It all worked out, like it just made sense.
Well, and I think too, because of the localized experience, I mean, like even looking at Cold World, where all of these bands were in your area, and that's what makes it so exciting when you have something that is locally based, yet also large enough to, you know, have 150 kids at a show, and you feel like you're a part of something much bigger than, you know, anything you'd ever experienced prior.
Yeah. And like, I think especially growing up, like in high, like going through high school and like being able to go to these shows and do that whole thing, like that was like my escape, you know? And like, I feel like for a lot of people, like I know a lot of people probably have that similar feeling and similar story, but like I, you know, before I went to that tech school, like I wasn't, you know, very like tight with a ton of people in school. I had like my small friend group and like, you know, we all got made fun of because we were skating and like doing weird shit by like all the jock kids and like, you know what I mean? But like, then when I went to a hardcore show, I was like, oh, I could literally, you know, be myself and like not feel weird about wearing the clothes that I wear and like liking the things that I like. So it just like, it was like my safe haven for like a long, long time, you know?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, that, and that's, you find your weirdo subcultures and you're like, oh, so like, it's okay to be myself and be into these things because all of these other people are just a random collection of all of these weirdo subcultures too. So totally.
Exactly. Yeah.
So as you started to, you know, get fully into, you know, independent music, hardcore and punk and everything, because One Step Closer is not your first band, right?
Even
though you're right. So I am guessing you played in terrible bands before that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
What were you trying to rip off? You don't have to reveal the band names if you don't feel like it, even though I could probably identify what you sounded like based on your band name.
Yes. Just because
every first band name is the best.
The first band was a band called Nothing Left, right?
Oh, okay.
I was the youngest person in the band. I was like 14 when we first started, or I literally just turned 15, like the 2 days or 3 days before we had our first practice. So, okay. And that was with a kid, like, it was like our drummer for One Step Closer, Tommy, he was in that band. So we kind of started that together. We started playing in bands together, like from the start. But it was with some other people that we're not really close with anymore, but it was absolutely horrible. And looking back, like it's embarrassingly bad. Like it's funny you bring this up because we are watching old live sets of it, like literally last week at our friend's house. And we are just like, how are we that bad? Like, how are we that terrible? You know? And like, I don't know. It's
part of the process, Matt. It's part of the process.
It is part of the process. And honestly, like those were like some of the most fun times I've ever had. Cause like, I didn't give a shit at all. I was just like having a blast, like being able to play. Cause I played guitar in that band. So
sure.
I was playing guitar and like, I was just having a fucking blast. You know what I mean? And like we got put on some really cool local shows and like, it was just a good time. We had like a cult of people that like really like fucked with us because we were younger and like we're just like, this is cool, this isn't that great, but like we're gonna mosh and like have fun anyway. So it was cool, right?
No, I love that because it does, especially when you're that young. Like, yes, you are self-aware where you are trying to be not like cool, like in the stereotypical description of the word, but you're just like, okay, we have to do enough to like belong here in this show. But then there are so many things that you just don't have any awareness of because you're just like you said, a dumb kid jumping around. You're
exactly
like, I gotta get some sick jumps in, right?
Yeah, I was literally just like, I like my dad had this white Ibanez, he still has it, and I literally like I'd just be like, Dad, let me rip the Ibanez, please. Like, I want to take the Ibanez, I want to look cool. You know what I mean? Like,
and,
oh,
yeah,
yeah. And it was just like so cool, and like I loved it. And I mean, I definitely like don't regret doing it because we said we did Nothing Left, and then I was like, oh, I really want to sing in a band, like really really bad, like just a straight youth crew band, and we did a band called Goon, and it was based off, did you ever see that hockey movie called Goon?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we like ripped the name off that. And, the demo artwork is like the hooded mosher with like people with like hockey sticks, like flying in the background and stuff like that. And it was just the most youth crew demo. And honestly, like it's kind of sick. Like, I think it's like, I was like we were all like mad young, and like honestly, like if I heard that from like a 16 or 15 year old now, I'd be like, oh, this is cool, you know.
Yeah.
But like that was super short lived, and then both bands kind of fell apart, and that's when we kind of took a break for a little bit and then did One Step Closer eventually.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I appreciate you laying that out because I do think it is very interesting to have discussions with people who it's like their first band is the band that they've been in. Like, I mean, I know this is a random example, but like, you know, Davey Havoc, he's only been in AFI.
Yeah.
It's just wild to even say that. It's like, I mean, that's cool.
That is crazy because I feel like almost every person I know has a story of like, yeah, my shitty band when I was like 16. You know what I mean?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Absolutely. It's all part of the process, because you then realize like what it takes to, you know, just the simple logistics of like getting to a show and getting on a show and like all of those building blocks that you take to be a little bit more professional as you get older.
Exactly. And also, I mean, like, I wasn't even driving at the time, you know what I mean? So I was kind of just relying on everybody else to drive me around and do all that stuff too. So it was like, I think that the bands like really like it, but like being in the bands at least like got me to just more shows, because all everybody was just driving us, you know what I mean? And even if we weren't playing, it was like now all these people who may have not, like, because it was only like really me and the one of the other kids at that time that were like interested in hardcore, and then all these other kids, including like our drummer Tommy, like had really no idea like what hardcore really was. So it was kind of like introducing them into something new, and like they all kind of got into it and like started, you know, driving us, and like we started doing more shows, and like it was a good time. Honestly, I really had a lot of good memories doing that stuff.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm going to guess around that time too, that's when you got into Straight Edge and that lifestyle was exposed to you. Was it, did you immediately identify with it, or was it one of those things where you were just like, oh, like, you know, I was partying a little bit and then Straight Edge got introduced? Like, how did that all transpire?
I was like always super against like that kind of stuff, just because my brother had like a really rough time, like when I was like growing up through like middle school with like drugs and stuff like that. So I think kind of seeing that and like seeing how it like affected my family kind of, it just like made me not really interested and like made me really like despise like that, like substance and like substance abuse, you know what I mean? So,
yep.
I always kind of, I didn't identify with it, but cause I didn't know what it was. And I didn't know there was words for like what I was already doing, you know? So, all through middle school, I was like, really like, nah, that shit sucks. And then when I was like 13 or 14, when I was like skating with some of the older heads, like they were talking about Straight Edge, because a lot of them were all Straight Edge because they're all hardcore kids. And they're like, oh yeah, you don't know what Straight Edge is? And I was like, nah, like, and they were just like, yeah, we pretty much like, you know, nobody like drinks or like does drugs or does anything like that. And I was just like, holy shit, like I've been doing that forever. And like, that's how I've always felt, you know? So, and then, I went to one party and I got there and all my friends who were like we weren't like claiming Straight Edge or anything at the time, but like all my friends who were like, yeah, like I hate that stuff too, blah, 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 just all like started drinking and like smoking, like doing all this stuff. And I was like, holy shit, I guess I gotta like do something. So I like took like a small sip of alcohol and like, I was just like, oh, this sucks. Like, I hate myself. I hate myself so much right now. And then I went home. Like, I literally left everybody there, skated all the way home. It was probably like a 45-minute skate home easily. Just skated all the way home at like 2 a.m. It was just like pushing and pushing and pushing. And I finally get home. And the next morning I wake up and I was just like, yeah, from now forward, like, I'm Straight Edge. And like, that's it. And it's been like that ever since.
Dude, I love that notion of just like taking a little sip and then just, you know, sitting in your head for 45 minutes as you're pushing home to be like, no, this is not me.
Yeah, it really was. Like, I remember taking that sip and I was just like sitting down in that basement and like, and I was like looking around and I like sat on the couch and I was just like, I remember like our one friend came over and was like, yo, are you good? Like, is everything okay? And I was just like, nah, I just really gotta like go home. Like, I'm just not feeling this like anymore. And like, that was it. And like I said, ever since, like, I haven't even thought about, you know, grabbing a drink or like grabbing like a fucking joint or anything like that. Like, I don't know. That's just like, I don't care if people do it. You know what I mean? And like, obviously, like, sure, to each their own, like everyone could do their thing and like completely, like, I'm not like that kind of person, but like, it's just something that just doesn't interest it. Like, interest me at least.
Yeah, no, totally get that. So now that, you know, you guys have done a decent amount of stuff in regards to, you know, just putting your music out there and then, you know, playing all the major festivals, something that I personally recognize within the context of playing, you know, like either Sound and Fury or This Is Hardcore, where it seems like bands, for lack of a better term, have kind of like a coming out party. Where it's like, it seems like people all of a sudden from a national perspective start to recognize a band. And like, I saw you guys, I think it was the 2019 Sound and Fury where you played. And it definitely felt like that for you guys, where it's like, wow, it's our first time really to the West Coast. A lot of people are going off and paying attention to you guys. Did that feel, I guess, kind of a market change for the band when you guys started to play those festivals and you started to see the reaction that people were giving you guys?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that, like, I was super shocked, like, about that Sound and Fury set. I wish there was a video of it. I know there is somewhere, but, like, no one ever has posted, like, any videos of that set. But, like, there's a lot of, like, Instagram stories and, like, stuff like that, you know what I mean? But, like, I would like kill to see a video of that, just because we were like, that was my first time ever on the West Coast in general, just like even like ever. And it was just crazy because I was like, we were there at Sound and Fury, you know, first time ever in LA. And it was the first time for everybody being in LA. And we're like, damn, we're here just to play music. Like, this is crazy. You know what I mean? And then we go inside and like, there's like, I remember when we got done with the set, there were still people outside the door because they stopped letting people in. And I was like, holy shit. Like, literally, like, this room was completely packed for us. We, like, no one really knows of us like too much at that point until, like, you know, like, I guess people were starting to find out, you know what I mean? But like, first time on the West Coast and it's like playing to a huge room, like packed out. And I was just like, and people were going fucking nuts. It was just like, it was a really surreal moment, I think, for everybody in the band. And like, I think we're just kind of like, well, you know, who, like, maybe there's a chance that maybe we could like do something with this. I don't know. You know what I mean? And like, I feel like that's always kind of a thought in your head when you're doing a band. It's like, oh, like, who knows what could happen with this band. But like, that was like the first moment, you know, like, just because we're in a completely different area that we've never been in. It was just like, it was so cool. I love Sound and Fury. I literally love that fest. It's so cool.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I understand what you're talking about, where it feels real, where it's like, this has jumped beyond anything that, you know, we could be playing in front of our friends or our friends' friends, but it's like absolute strangers we are making an impact on. And that's when it starts to be, you know, it just means something that much more to you.
Exactly. And also like that was like part of that, because we did those Half Heart shows in Boston too. Like that, like, me and our guitar player Grady, who also sings for the other band I play in, Anxious, me and him booked that full US together, like just by ourselves. Like, it was just me and him. Like, I was 19 and he was like just freshly 18 or like about to turn 18. Like, two like young ass kids like trying to like book an entire full US tour, and like, we did it. And like, that was like a super, like, that's still something I'm super proud of, just because like, I feel like doing a DIY full US is like really hard. And for like younger kids, like, just to like somehow pull it together, like, I don't know. It's just like, it worked. And like, that was easily like one of the craziest like experiences of my life, just between like the Have Heart shows, Sound and Fury, and then ending the tour at This Is Hardcore. Like, it was just like, it was crazy.
Yeah, no, it's really it. And I think too that, you know, as you start to put the practical things with a band in motion, like you said, you know, being able to experience what it's like booking a show and then also be like, hey, you know, like, we need $500 for this tour package, or just like the business implications. And you start to get more comfortable with that, even though prior to that, you'd be like, why the hell is anybody going to pay us for a show? That's ridiculous.
Yeah. That's kind of how we were like booking that full US. We're like, let's just like take whatever we could get. You know what I mean? And let's just like we just want to do it. We just want to do it now. Yeah. I still get like anxiety asking about money. Like I hate it. I hate it so much. I feel so weird about it. And like, I always think that people are going to think that I'm being too good, or like think my band is amazing or something. You know what I mean? And like, in reality, it's just like, nah, like we kind of just need this, like to even just be able to get up there and like it for it to make sense. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, I was going to ask you how, like, now that, you know, the band is on the precipice of, you know, where you guys are going to be extremely active, and you're doing all of these things, and you're doing these nationwide tours, and obviously releasing a record on Run for Cover, the business implications of the band, like, so does that, I mean, clearly it makes you nervous, like you were just talking about.
It really does.
How do you overcome that anxiousness, or do you just kind of like exist in it knowing that this is something that you have to do because that is what it takes to kind of move a band forward?
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of a little bit of both, where, you know, we started working with our friend Jason, who is a booking agent for Anxious. So like now over quarantine, we started working with him, and we started working like our good friend Bob Shedd, who also does Axe to Grind podcast. He is like our manager, like for the band now and stuff. So like they kind of help with that, the money side of things, where I don't want, like, instead of making me like bug these people about money, I'm just kind of like, hey, could you just like kind of ask them like you know, what are they offering? You know what I mean? So I don't look like a dickhead, like asking about it. And, but we still like do a lot of our own DIY stuff, like still too. Like it's a cool relationship that we have with, you know, with both of those. So like I usually handle all the DIY stuff. So I kind of just like, I don't know, like at this point, like most of the people that we work with DIY stuff is like all friends of ours at this point, because they've already booked shows for us before, or we're just like already homies with them. You know what I mean? So I don't really feel uncomfortable like talking about money with them, because I know that they know me better than that, and they know that I'm not trying to, you know, be a type of way or anything like that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're not trying to, you know, squeeze them for an additional $100 because you just, you know, you guys want to eat more, you know, burgers at the end of the day.
Exactly. Yeah. For real. Yeah. Like I know, like, because like for instance, like we just got asked to do a show soon and like coming up, and one of our good friends like is booking it, and I was like, hey man, like can we like he because he hit us up about it, and I was like, well, like are you gonna have us like in the headlining spot, or like what's the deal? And like kind of like I felt like really comfortable just like talking about that kind of stuff, just because like I know him well, and like we're like friends, you know. But like sometimes with like some random strangers, like if they were like booking stuff, it's just kind of like, it's just like a little nerve wracking for me, just cause like, that's just like something I don't like talking about really.
Sure. Yeah. I understand you. There's that, especially too. And I think this very much exists within the context of punk and hardcore. There's like the punk rock guilt idea that gets placed on people, where it's like, where it's like, oh, we can't ask for this because like, that sounds like what a, you know, like mainstream rock band would ask for or whatever. But it's it's like, dude, asking for water backstage is not a diva move, you know, like that's normal. You're okay.
No. And sometimes like we've played shows where even that, like asking that, they're just like, fine. Like, yeah, like there's like some bottles over there. Just like grab one. You know what I mean? And like, that's not a lot to ask for, bro. You bought that for like $5. Like, come on, you know, like,
right. How about a loaf of bread and some peanut butter and jelly? Like, that's all we're asking for.
Yeah, for real. Exactly. It's like, it's not crazy. Like, but yeah, so I think, and especially like big time with hardcore, where it's like, oh, like getting paid $150 for the show that you just traveled 3 or 4 hours for is like so common that it's just like, oh, like, yeah, that's just like how it works. You know what I mean? But like,
yeah,
then it gets to the point where like, you're like, ah, oh, but maybe that's just not how it works, you know, or maybe yeah. it's actually not supposed to work that way.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. A few things I wanted to hit before I let you go was the, the fact that you guys are, you know, in the relative sense of the term, you know, younger within the hardcore scene, but your guys' musical output has been, in my opinion, very mature. Like you guys feel, I mean, even with, you know, your earliest recordings, it felt very, for lack of a better term, confident. And, you know, I'm not trying to, well, yes, I am trying to blow smoke up your butt, but at the same time, like it's, you know, a lot of times when you're listening to bands' earlier material, it feels like that. Whereas, you know, you guys have always seemed pretty confident. And do you think that's because, you know, you guys know each other so well and you know what the sort of vision of the band is? And when I say vision, I don't mean that in like grand terms, like here's what we're going to be in 10 years. But, you know, does anything of what I'm saying there kind of resonate with you?
Yeah, I think everyone just like, especially with like the more recent things, like especially from me to you and stuff, we were kind of just like, we want to be like self-expression. Like I think like self-expression was just like what we wanted to do and what we like, who we wanted to be was like ourselves, you know? And I think a big thing with that was like making sure that was like known in the music. Yeah, and it is it's always nerve-wracking putting out new music and doing stuff like that. But like, I always felt like we were very like true to like the things that we liked, like whether they were like influences outside of hardcore or like even just like a song. Like I remember, like I know for like the new record, like Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls was like a huge song for me for some reason, for like this, like the one section in it is just so cool. And like, it was so influential. And like, I don't care to say that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care if people know that. Like, I just think at the end of the day, like we really just like put ourselves into the music. And I think that's why, you know, we just kind of carried with confidence just because we would just wanted to be ourselves.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and there's that idea too, that when you start to, and this kind of goes into something else I was going to ask, where the maturity level of what you guys are kind of putting out too, it, yes, of course it could easily be lumped in towards just like, oh yeah, you know, you guys are just Turning Point ripoffs, which you guys will proudly admit, but just that idea that you are pulling these influences from things that might not be quote unquote typical of how a band would try to insert this stuff. Like, you know, Goo Goo Dolls is a great example because at one point they were a hardcore band, but just like that maturity level can be influenced because you were maybe at an early age more open to, like, I know when I was 15, if I heard Turning Point, like I didn't hear Turning Point real, or I didn't get into them until I was probably about like 18 or 19. And if I heard them when I was 15, I probably would have been like, I don't know, this doesn't sound like Earth Crisis, I'm not that into it or whatever. Yeah, like, yeah. You know, so maybe it is because you guys got into that stuff at a little bit earlier age.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because of that or if it's just because, like, well, honestly, it probably is because, like I said, like, I think, like, everybody, like, half the band, you know, didn't even really listen to hardcore music until, like, we started playing in hardcore bands or, like, doing more things like that. So, like, almost as a whole, the whole group kind of, like, was gaining all this stuff, but, like, everybody had all this love for other music beforehand and, like, so much appreciation for other stuff, like, you know, like I sometimes, like, you get caught in these bubbles where you're only listening to hardcore music, you know what I mean? Or like you go through like a 3 month span where it's just like you're only listening to these like a couple hardcore bands or something, you know? But like, yep. I think that was really only the case for like possibly me and like maybe like one other person in the band, because everyone just kind of loves so much other stuff. So like, it was just always like other bands on constant rotation. Like, I know like our bass player is like Beck is like his favorite artist like ever. And like that like is a huge influence on him. And just like no matter what, like that'll always probably be a huge one for him, just like in any musical endeavor that he ever does. You know what I mean? So like, I think people just like, I think from pulling out on those outside, like outside of hardcore, at least, like, was really just like what helped us like do our thing and just like make our sound and be confident with it. I don't know, it's kind of crazy like looking back and like thinking about this like after you asked me this.
No, I realize because it is a difficult question to kind of walk through because, you know, you're still in the middle of it. Like, it's easier when you've got, you know, maybe five full lengths under your belt.
Yeah.
You know, but like, you know, as long as you, I'm holding you to the fact that you guys need to release five full lengths because, you know, almost every hardcore band breaks up after two full lengths. So like, let's go ahead and break that tradition. Okay?
All right, let's do, yeah, we'll shoot for five. Maybe we'll get to four.
No, and that's fine. I ideally would like you to break two, please.
Okay.
Like that's just, I'll hold you to that.
Yeah.
I'm going to hunt you down.
That's yeah. No, we'll break two at least.
Fair. Between two and five.
Yeah. That's fair.
Okay.
I think that's reasonable.
I think so too. And I mean, you guys have plenty of time, but, the last thing I want to hit on was the, like you said, your parents were super supportive of you guys, you know, starting to do more with the band, you know, touring and being active and all this stuff, you know, how, but I'm sure that I wouldn't call it a concern, but I'm sure that they were just like the practical implications of like, oh, so you're not gonna, you know, continue to go to college and like all these things that, you know, you might've had plans for prior to the band consuming more of your life. You know, how did you navigate those conversations with your parents?
I'm kind of thinking back, like I pretty much told them when I was in college, I went to a community college that's pretty close by to me because I didn't really know exactly what I was trying to do, like I was saying earlier. And like, I thought I wanted to do this, but I ended up not wanting to do that. So like, I thought, you know, let's just do community college and I'll do 2 years and just like hopefully figure it out. And then from there, I'll go to, you know, like a 4-year school or something. So after those 2 years and like the bands were, you know, starting to pick up and do more things, I was just kind of like, hey, like, what do you guys think about just like me trying to do this for like a little while? And like, if I fail miserably, then I just come home and I go back to school and like finish my 4-year degree and then get a real job or like do whatever, you know? And they were just like, yeah, like, I think you should, because I like, you guys are, you know, touring and like you have this big summer tour, you're doing all these cool shows. And I think what really kind of sealed the deal for them, at least, was when we played those Have Heart shows in Boston. My parents actually drove up for that. And
hell yeah.
Yeah, it was really sick. And I think like they saw like the reaction that we got and like saw people, you know, caring and like buying merch and like doing all this stuff. And like my mom like tells me this story about like how she went to the like some record store in like Boston and like there were some kids there wearing like a One Step Closer shirt. And she was like, oh, like that's really cool. Like my son plays in that band. Like they just played like the Palladium, and like him and like a couple of his friends are like freaking out to my parents. Like, and we're just like, oh my God, you're like, you're this kid's parents. Like that's so crazy. Like whatever. And like, I think that also like, they were like, whoa, like they, like people actually know them, you know what I mean? Or like know of them. And like, I think those like two kind of, those two things like really like, were like, okay, like you could do this. And like, we want you to do this and like push yourself. And, but you like gotta work until like work a job until, you know, you're touring too much that like you can't work. So,
yeah, sure. Well, I think those experiences make it feel all not even real from a sort of, hey, Ryan is going to be okay from a financial perspective, but just the idea that this art, this stuff that, you know, my child is creating is having this real world impact on people where it's just like, you know, like what, why do you care that Ryan is my son? Like,
yeah,
so weird.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's like, kind of like, that's really what I think she was like feeling. Cause I remember her calling me later that night and she was just like, yeah, like I had like this interaction with this kid and like, they were like freaking out that I was your, like we were your parents. And like, it was like really funny and like, it was crazy. But like, I really think like, you know, I don't think they never really like said anything to me about it, like saying like, that was like the moment when they're like, oh, okay. But like, I think, you know, doing that stuff, like, and like kind of seeing us play I'm now even more with like the Run for Cover signing and stuff like that. Like when I told them about that, I think they were just really like, oh, like, okay, like, you're contracted to records now. Like that's like a crazy thing, you know? And like,
right.
And like, so that was like something, you know, that I think it just kind of like put it into perspective for them.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, and the fact that they're like, oh yeah, Ryan is not going to, you know, join a touring rock band where he's, you know, busy, with a mouth, you know, a nose full of cocaine or whatever. It's like, yeah. Oh yeah, he'll be okay. He's responsible.
Yeah. All through like my childhood, really, because like they knew like how against that stuff I was. Like I was literally able to do whatever I wanted. They did not care because they knew like, oh, the worst thing that kid could be doing is probably like breaking something like a window with his skateboard or doing something like that, like stupid, like
right. Yeah. Like, yeah, he can get arrested for skating in a place that he shouldn't be. And like, that's much easier to get him out of jail than, you know, killing somebody because he's driving.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So like, and that's like, they always like really had like a big, you know, trust in me and stuff like that. And like, even like I worked a job up until literally the pandemic, cause we were going to be so busy like before, like coming out of that tour from Europe, like we had so much stuff lined up and I was just like there's no way I'm going to be able to get off work for like all this stuff. Cause I was working a retail job and like they were already kind of like tight on me with like taking days off because like, it's so demanding like in retail. And like, sure. I remember like having that conversation with them where I was just like, yeah, like this is like kind of the time where I'm like, hey, like we're going to hit it like full time. You know what I mean? Like we're going to be touring like 6-7 months, like this year. Like that's like, I say anything over like 5-6 months is like full time at that point. You know what I mean? And it's like,
yeah,
they're just like, yeah, like super supportive and just like very much like, just go for it. And like, this is the time to do it. And like you said, like if you fail or like, it just doesn't work out, then you could just come back and do whatever you want to do. Like you could do school.
Yeah, it's a much different story if you were 40 years old and having three children and be like, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to go on the road for 8 months with a hardcore band.
It's like, yeah, yeah. It's really like, I think the age thing was definitely a big thing for my parents. It's just because it was like, okay, this is like the prime time for you to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can make all your dumb mistakes now. It's fine. We'll be here to pick everything up, right?
Exactly. We'll help you along the way, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Your mom will be there to be like, all right, this is how you can get the band started with a bank account. Like, we'll get you set up as an S Corp, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
That's awesome. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for hanging out, dude. I really appreciate you letting me ping pong around your brain all these random spots.
Dude, hell yeah. I was so excited to do this. So thank you so much, man.
So again, thank you very much for interacting with this podcast. Thank you very much for Ryan for coming on the show and James, his publicist, who I could not have responded to this email request of like, hey, One Step Closer is putting a new record. If you're interested in having them on the podcast, I was like, I need the record immediately and I need to have Ryan on the show. It was like within 30 seconds of that email going out. So was very, very happy to make that happen. And yeah, I'm just so thankful in general for this podcast in this form. Next week is, I can't even believe I'm saying this, Walter Schreifels is on the podcast. He's from Quicksand, Rival Schools, Gorilla Biscuits, World's Fastest Car, Moondog, you name it. He has probably been involved in a musical project that has been foundational to your understanding of independent music. And Walter, he's been a guest that I've wanted to have for a while, but it's one of those things where I don't know if I was like intimidated or I just was like, oh no, so many other people talk to him. So many other people do interviews with him. I don't want to bug him, but we were able to make it happen and it was so, so much fun. I loved it. So again, so beautiful that we can have Ryan from One Step Closer and then the following week we can have Walter from Quicksand. Love this damn thing. So that's what we got next week. And until then, please be safe, everybody.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.